The end of the Viking Age did not mean the disappearance of the Vikings. It meant the disappearance of the historical conditions that had made the word Viking so powerful, feared, and recognizable across Europe. By the late 11th century, the raiding fleets that had once descended upon monasteries, river towns, royal estates, and trading ports were no longer the defining force of the North. Yet the people who had built those ships, crossed those seas, and shaken the political order of Western and Eastern Europe did not vanish into silence. They became kings, farmers, merchants, settlers, soldiers, poets, saints, nobles, and ancestors. Their world changed, but it did not simply collapse. What ended was a way of life centered on seasonal raiding, mobile war bands, pagan aristocratic networks, and fragmented chieftain power. What endured was something deeper. A northern legacy carried into kingdoms, laws, languages, place names, stories, sea routes, military traditions, and cultural memory. To understand the Vikings after the Viking Age, one must begin with this essential transition. The Viking did not die on a battlefield in 1066, nor did he fade with the last longship on a gray northern shore. He was absorbed into the medieval world he had helped create. During the 9th and 10th centuries, Viking activity had been shaped by opportunity. Weak coastal defenses, rich monastic wealth, fractured kingdoms, expanding trade networks, and the political ambition of Scandinavian leaders all encouraged raiding and migration. A man could join a crew, sail west or east, return with silver, establish a reputation, and use that wealth to gain followers at home. In that world, ships were not merely transportation, they were instruments of social mobility. A successful raider could become a landholder, a local lord, or even the founder of a dynasty. However, by the 11th century, the landscape had changed dramatically. European kingdoms became more organized, rulers collected taxes more effectively, fortifications improved, and Christian monarchies developed stronger administrative systems. At the same time, Scandinavian rulers such as Harald Bluetooth, Olaf Tryggvason, Olaf Haraldsson, Knut the Great, and their successors worked to consolidate royal authority at home. The old freedom of independent war bands gradually became harder to sustain. Men who once might have followed a sea king into raiding now found themselves drawn into royal armies, Christian households, legal assemblies, and settled agricultural life. The energy of the Viking Age was not erased, it was disciplined, redirected, and made useful to kingdoms. This transformation was especially visible in Scandinavia itself. In Denmark, Norway, and Sweden, the growth of kingship changed the meaning of power. Earlier chieftains had relied on personal loyalty, gift-giving, feasting, and success in war. A leader proved himself by distributing silver, weapons, land, and honor. Yet as Christian kingship expanded, authority became more institutional. Kings claimed legitimacy not only through descent and victory but through baptism, church patronage, lawmaking, coinage, and alliances with bishops. The shift was not smooth or immediate. Pagan customs, regional loyalties, and aristocratic rivalries remained strong, and many communities did not accept royal authority simply because a king demanded it. Still, the direction was clear. The Scandinavian North moved from a world of competing chieftains toward one of Christian kingdoms. The old warrior aristocracy did not disappear. Many of its families became the noble class of medieval Scandinavia. They exchanged the symbolic language of pagan sacrifice and heroic raiding for the language of Christian rule, dynastic marriage, landholding, and royal service. In doing so, they carried Viking habits of ambition into new political forms. Christianization played a central role in this process, but it must not be imagined as a simple replacement of one belief system by another. The conversion of the North was gradual, uneven, and deeply political.